explained to you my first missionary years were that I had to learn to become completely naked before the Lord, before myself, and before the people. Because it wasn't very long that I noticed I had nothing to offer these people. I couldn't even communicate with them. And so I just found myself absolutely naked, powerless, you know. And I just had to let go of that. There was just no way that I could hold on to that. And it was a constant letting go every day. You know, it's kind of difficult to have children, a 2 or 3 year old child, correct you. I found myself going with the children more with the adults, because I would walk the streets in Borba with the children, because children are very, very helpful, and they're very free, and they're very open. They don't mind repeating. You know, and that's what I needed. I needed somebody to keep repeating Portuguese to me, keep repeating the Portuguese with me. So the first 5 or 6 months in Borba, I just found myself associated with the children. And these children right now are the young married couples. And I know all their problems. And I know how to cope with their problems, because somehow or other, they realized that I was naked and that they had to help dress me, and they did it. There is a tie between these children and myself that cannot be broken. And it wasn't that I went with the same children every day. I didn't. I walked the streets with certain children. I went fishing with certain children. We didn't have running water then. And I took a bath with certain children so that they knew they were helping me. You know, and I wasn't afraid to experiment in the foods or anything with the children. And that's exactly how I learned to let go of myself and to really and truly try to find that I had to be incarnated in the reality of where I lived. And that is exactly how I learned the Portuguese. As I left the children, I became involved more with youth, and then from youth I went to adult. It was just like a growing up. And it was the best experience of my life, because so often I had to say to them, I don't know, because I didn't know. And I could never find out how. Do you know what I'm saying to you? Like here in the States, somehow you don't know, but you could find out. But I didn't. I didn't. And sometimes I would just get exasperated. And I would say, oh, how can I stand it? One time I was trying to say the word father-in-law, and I could not say it. And a 3 year old come right up to me and said it, you know, as if to say, oh, my word, here you are, a big adult, and you don't even know that word. I mean, I think, oh my God, a three-year-older told me what to say today. But you know, it was very good for my humility. I just know that I just became opened. And once I just opened my heart and myself, I could see that I would learn the language. And that took about 2 years. Not quite 2 years. I would say it took about 1.5 years. And the first thing I did was accepted the First Communion class. And they were the same children that walked on the street with me. So there was a bond there. And from there, I just began to grow with the people. And I just think it's excellent, because they have become a very, very integral part of my life. And I have learned to do so many things with them and because of them. You know, I feel that they have given me much, much more than I could ever give them. And I mean that in my sense of poverty, in my sense of life, in my sense of well-being, in my relationship to God. Their faith is just overwhelming. And what I'd like to say about their faith is probably it needs to go through a purification to bring it from a simple faith to perhaps an adult simple faith. And probably that's our biggest job. But the basic belief is there. You know, when I go into these little villages and they haven't seen a priest for years, and someone has taught them to say the Our Father. Someone has taught them about God. It just overwhelms me. And another great thing is I have learned to really and truly respect and love the human dignity of a person. They have taught me that. I could never teach them that, but they taught me that. You know, it's all right to be basically human. And it took a long time because, you know, I had built up defense mechanisms and I had made myself different. And so I had to go back and find out and live basic human situations and embarrassing situations to find out that it's just fine to be basically human. They have taught me the beauty of living a simple, simple life. I don't need all that I have to be what I am or to be happy. Their life is simple, it's close to earth, it's earthy, and it's filled with faith, and it's filled with trust in the Lord. And I just needed that, and I just fell right into that simplicity, and I love that simplicity of life. I like being poor with them. I'm not too sure I like the suffering that comes with the poor or being poor, but I like being poor with them because I think they're very, very close to God. They can only depend on God, and that's very beautiful. Despite the misery and the poorness that's there, they are happy people. They enjoy everything, and they've just given me a whole new perspective and dimension to living in life. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you what changes you've seen in the Border Mission tradition.
The changes I've seen in the community of Borba, I'll talk about that first. I've seen the church grow in many, many, many dimensions and many ways. I've seen the church become totally involved in working for the poor.
Was it not that way in the Christian?
Well, the poor didn't feel comfortable in coming to church. And I don't mean just coming to Mass, just being a part of the church. And through the Sisters of St. Joseph, I do personally feel that we have reached out to the poor and reached into them. So I think there's more participation in Bible discussions and inviting them to participate in real, real faith-growing experiences. And I really contribute that to the Sisters of St. Joseph. There's been a lot of progress. I've seen education has improved somewhat. I've seen it open up, so to speak. I'm not too sure I can say that it has improved in education per se. But I do believe that it has improved because right now we even have a high school. I went from primary to secondary. I can never compare to the education system here, but it does do something to educate the children. And I'm totally, totally amazed at how much the children learn despite their teachers. That just overwhelms me. I've seen the city expand in many ways. More people have come into Borba. More industry. Well, what has brought them into Borba is, I would have to say, basically education. Because out in the outlying villages and these Christian communities where we work, they can only go to the fourth grade. And I can only compare the school system to the one-room classroom that we had at the beginning of the century. And that's what it is. They can only go to the fourth grade. And so to continue from fifth to eighth, and from eighth to, they only go to 10th grade, they have to come into the city, so which is Borba. So therefore, there has been a lot of migrating from these small basic communities into Borba. This year, we were going to evaluate some of our basic Christian communities because some of them are just a shell, because all of these families have come in to get educated. Their parents have a sense of educating their children. They don't want them to suffer as they have. Another thing that has brought a lot of people in is work. There have been several sawmills that opened up outside of the fact that they're owned by rich people, and there's a lot of injustice that goes on in the sawmills. It has given work to some people, and so they have come in from the interior looking for more work. The hospital, I think, and the doctor have really helped also. I think some people have really made a choice to come in where they could get some kind of help when they are sick. I've seen education in all aspects. You know, when I think of education, I just don't think in the school. I think in better lifestyles, bettering their everyday life, being aware of other people, their pride in their own city. I think all of this has been a sign of progress to me. Sometimes I have questions on where I stand on progress, because sometimes progress has destroyed a lot of simplicity. For example, when I first went there, we only had electricity from 6 to 10. So 9:45, the lights would dim to let you know that you have 15 minutes to go home or to wherever you were going. And now that we have electricity and it goes all day, I see that family union has really dispersed. You know, everybody at 10 o'clock, you'd walk the streets at night and you'd see all these family huddled around a candle having something to eat. I don't see that anymore in the city. I see it on the outline in districts where they don't have electricity yet. I can see that. You know, I can see there's more of a family togetherness. That's what I've noticed. I've also noticed that a knowledge of wealth sort of changes the simplicity of life. You know, a lot of people see what wealth can buy, and so there's like a striving to become rich in among the merchants and among the store people, you know, storekeepers and stuff like that. I've seen progress also in clothing. You know, I've seen them go from a simple type of clothing to the clothing that we wear right now. Sometimes I marvel at the fact that they live in such shacks and they always come out looking so clean and their clothes are always pressed. You know, and they don't have cupboards and they don't have closets. And most of them are in a little old suitcase underneath a table somewhere, But it's amazing how they come out so clean and so pressed and so up to date. A lot of progress has been done with people going from Borba into Manaus and being involved in city life and then coming back and then planting that in the little villages. Houses have taken on a new appearance. When I first went there, most of the houses were wooden and they were all made in the same style. If you go on the second, third, fourth, and fifth on the streets, you will notice all of them are the same style. But in the first street, where a lot of the merchants live, you will notice, being in Manaus, they notice different architectures in the houses, and the houses are different. I've seen most houses go from a straw hut to a little wooden basic house. The houses were just very small. Most of the times they're two rooms. Some have gone to the cinder block. The cinder blocks are made there now. There's a factory there that makes a huge cinder block. So many people have gone in the cinder block, even though it is more expensive, but in the long run it's cheaper, because when you have a wooden house, you're always fighting termites, you're always fighting bugs, and always repairing. You know, your house can fall down in a short time because termites are awful. They can just eat away rapidly. And I do believe the church has made a definite effort to accompany this progress in the best way that we can. And I feel that perhaps the best way we have done it is by being thoroughly involved in liberation theology, which we've tried to live, we've tried to pray, we've tried to preach, and that has been working with basic Christian communities, which we call Comunidade Eclesiástica de Base. And you can see, when you work with those communities, exactly how you can lead them to recognize their human dignity, to see how much God really loves them based on the Word and the Scripture, and how they can do something about their situation. That has been the greatest way that we have been real and truly been able to work with the people and encourage them to live in basic Christian community, and that's working together, living together, praying together, and I like to say fighting together, but I mean that in trying to see exactly their human rights.
What are some examples of that?
One of the examples I have is the most important one, is that in these basic Christian communities, up to about 2 years ago, they were never even counted because nobody had birth certificates, nobody had anything. And so they were not counted. You know, they were just squatters. And they worked that land years and years, 50, 60, 70 years. And now the big business and multinational corporations are coming in. All these poor people are losing their land and they have nothing but a canoe. And they have no rights because they're not recognized by anything.
They have no deeds.
They have no deeds. They have nothing. They don't even have a birth certificate to say that they are counted as a citizen of Brazil. And so one of the ways that the church, through the National Conference of Brazilian Bishops, has put a campaign out that we begin to teach and preach how important it is for them to get their birth certificates and their baptismal certificates, and start fighting for their rights to own land. And so the church has been very prominent because the church keeps good records. And so we've been really blessed and fortunate. And the books in Borba are from 1918. And they are well registered. And if there is some way that baptism has been missed, the bishop has been very generous. If you can get someone to say that you've been a resident in that town and that you've been baptized, then he will make out a witness to a baptism, which has helped these people to go to get a birth certificate, and from the birth certificate to get a working permit, and from the working permit to get to fight for their land. And that has been hard work, but it's very, very good work. Also, we've started and worked along with a union, a workers' union, which has really and truly the aim of working with these people is to begin to bring them to awareness, a consciousness of their human dignity as a person. Yeah. They have a right to live, they have a right to work, they have a right to happiness, and they have a right to worship. And up to that time, up to this time, and still it's very difficult because we still have that patron system, so to speak. You know, a rich man owns all the rubber plantation. And on this plantation, his workers have a little shack and a little place to plant. But he controls their whole life. He controls their workday, he controls their money, he controls their food, he is a doctor also. If you're sick, he gives you medicine and that kind of thing. So it's very difficult to work through that. And Sally, I really can't tell you how much we've done in it. And about the best thing I could say to that is that we have raised a real consciousness about that, you know. We have brought them to an awareness that they are still slaves. Through the union, we've been able to update some of the prices on the products. You know, we get information saying that such and such a product should give you such and such an amount. And so we communicate that to the workers. And they in the union won't sell for less if they can help it, which has helped them to become aware that they deserve a just wage for a hard day's work. We talk, we try as much as we possibly can to talk and to orientate on justice, you know, social justice. All the documents that have been written, Medellin and Puebla, and all the documents that come from the National Conference of Brazilian Bishops really and truly concentrate on what it means to live the gospel in the light of social justice. And so our job is to really communicate and see that somehow or other people come to awareness of this is the situation and that they themselves can better their own situation. And we do that through the training of leaders, through the orientation that we have with school teachers. One of the things that we have always kept in mind and we try very, very hard to do is that we train them to do the work. You know, and I can give you an example. I am minister of baptism. I am a minister of baptism in the Eucharist. And I only baptize out of necessity when there isn't a minister of baptism around. So that they grow to realize that this is their church. This is our church. Not the bishop's church, not the priest's church, and not the sister's church. And most of the time, when I ask a question or when we want to do something, they'll say, what do you think? You know better. And I always say, I don't know better because I don't live here. So that we encourage them. They know the situation. They know the people in their community. They know, they really know what can happen in their own community. They just have to be led to express that. And see, oppression has not allowed them to express it. And in the small, basic Christian community, based on the word and on the the scripture, they can. And some of our Bible discussions are just overwhelming. And through this, through all of this discovery on our part, and especially on my part, I have accepted the culture, and I love the culture, and I also make myself, in the best way that I can, be a part of it, and to know everything that I possibly can that will help me to help them to help themselves. And that means getting involved in political involvement, you know, expressing myself in the way that I possibly can without being uncharitable or without pointing a finger at anybody. And that takes a lot of finesse, whatever you want to call it. That has been more or less our kind of work. And it has built up a beautiful trust and a beautiful understanding with the people. They know that when they come to us, that somehow or other we will lead them to find how they can get help. You know? And before I said to you, I found it very difficult to say no.
Yes.
When I first went down, I had this zeal and this sense that I had to give. When people came to the house to ask for food, to ask for money, I would give it. And I did it for a while, and then we had a meeting. And at this meeting, the bishop said that we had to adopt a philosophy that we do not give the poor the fish, because if we give them the fish, it becomes very easy to beg. And begging doesn't give into human dignity, or doesn't uplift human dignity. But what we should do is teach the poor to fish. And that was very difficult for me. But as I grew into this, I could see the philosophy, and I know what it means. And so it's when you see that poorness, it's to recognize it and then help these poor to realize why they are poor and that they really can do something about it.
Is this Bishop Bailey?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
This is the philosophy.
Yes, this he comes with. And so a lot of things has been put on to a parish council. You know, it's amazing what our parish council has been able to do. And in this parish council, there are different committees, and one of the committees is the Social Action Committee. So if someone comes to me and says they do not have enough food, I don't turn them away. I say to them, well, you go down the street, and you go and see so-and-so. And because it comes through the church, this man will give them food, or give them transportation, whatever they need. We do not give them money. We give them whatever they need, and medication, transportation, food, stuff like that. But that's all done through the parish, so that we raise the consciousness that they themselves have to help their poor. And that meant we had to refuse a lot of things. You know, like there are a lot of grants that come through Brazilian governments and grants that come through Brazilian organizations. Our bishop will not allow us to accept any of that, because he said once we begin to accept grants and help from outside organizations, first of all, they're thoroughly involved in the government that is a military government, and that is a way that we really and truly give approval to the kind of government they have. So we
so
do without.
So even if you could use it, accepting it is giving approval.
Yes, he won't allow. And it's just been one of those things.
What are some of the changes
in the community of Sisters of St. Joseph? Sally and Connie, I really have to tell you that I'm going to look at them as a personal way. the first three sisters that went down there, I just cannot praise their work enough, because they really and truly were beautiful women and good women. And somehow or other, through their presence, they built a trust. And so the rest of us have really and truly worked and lived in the trust that they have built, and we have improved on it. Those three sisters will never be forgotten. There are three or four women that pray for them every single solitary day. Name them. Sister Mary Anna also, they pray for Sister Mary Anna, because while she was there, her total giveness to the sick was a beautiful example to them. There have been dreams, you know, there are certain dreams that you have when you're working with something, and it seemed to me like there were certain dreams that we had. One of the dreams that we had was to live in community among ourselves, so that we could be the example of basic Christian community to the people. It's hard for us to really and truly say basic Christian community should be the following, and we don't live it in the house. So that was very important. That was one of the things, and that still is one of our basic goals. We try the best we can to live a sense of community. People see us do things together, walk together, work together, play together, you know, sitting around, studying together, discussing together, praying together. And then we take it from our own community experience of Sisters of St. Joseph and try to bring it into their community.
Have you had to build up to that? Has it always been that way?
Well, it has always been that way, but last 6 years, it's been better, because with two people, it's difficult to show what kind of Christian community you live, because it's easy, if you know what I mean. But as we got three, as we got four, as we got five, I think it meant a whole lot more. Okay. Another change in the community I saw is that we opened our house. Our house is like, it's very hospitable. We never refuse anybody. People feel free to come to it if they need anything. They know that they could come, and it's a freedom. And that meant that we had to give up a lot of our American privacy, you know, because the house became a house where people felt they were welcome, and they come, and they still come. And the most important part of this is the young people feel very comfortable with us. You know, and I think Janice and Corrine and the younger people had a lot to draw their attention to that. You know, they know that when they come to our house, the coffee thermos is right on the table. They are free to take coffee. You know, there's just a hospitality that just makes them feel right at home. Another thing that I've seen was the necessity for us to have an outreach in our missionary program was a necessity for the boat. And the community has played a very, very active part in getting this boat. And we call this boat the Promessa. And it is very, very useful for our work. It's a way for us to get out to these missions and stay there as long as they need us, to begin to build and to affirm Christian community. Sometimes we would begin a Christian community and you could see that it had roots, but you didn't go back for 3 or 6 months, and when you went back, there was nothing affirming in them, nothing telling them, encouraging them to come on, and so you would be back starting all over again. And so that's like a dream, this boat. And now this boat is becoming a reality. And when I go back, it will be a reality because I am released to do more work on the boat, and I can visit these basic Christian communities, and we can stay as long as we want. We do visit them on a motorboat, but it's 1 day or 2 days or 3 days, and it's not enough to really give them, it's not enough to really encourage or water the roots that are there. That's been a dream. And one of the dreams that we've had, and it's been my dreams, is I don't know how many times in these last 12 years I've asked myself, why am I here? You know, am I here to begin a Sister of St. Joseph community here in Borba? Am I here to just do my work, or do my little bit and just go on? I just didn't know why I was there. And just recently, since Marge has been there in January this year, we've launched out in a real formation program. And right now we have two girls that are living with us. Now, we're not saying it's an affiliation, we're not saying anything, but we've opened up because these two girls have expressed definite desire to live with us. Will it be a community of Sisters of St. Joseph? I don't know. But will it be maybe a Christian religious community, a Brazilian community? Maybe so. No. And I don't think we can write any program or any plan. I think we have to grow with it. And so far, it's been beautiful. It's been really beautiful for me because I've had to let go of a lot of things that I thought I had let go of and didn't, you know. And yet it's an exchange of cultures. It's coming together in the middle. You know, I can't really deny that I am an American. You know, I sometimes I have the desire to do that, but I can't. I also can't deny the fact that I am an educated woman. So I have to sort of meet these people in the middle of the road, you know, and I think we have a lot to offer each other, which means a lot of giving and taking on both sides, and it's just been lovely, just great. In the few experiences I have, and from the letters that I've received recently, it's been really helpful to have someone live with us. Now, perhaps, maybe next year, it will be an affiliation or association or an affiliation, and maybe we will go on like that. But it's like growing with a formation program according to the culture in the best way we know how. Recently, we decided that we needed to reach out more because in community, there were five vibrant women, talented women, zealous women, and we were all living in one village. And it wasn't bad, it was very good, but somehow or other, all of us felt like we had to reach out more. You know, there was places that needed Sisters of St. Joseph. And so when Marge was there, we talked this all out, and we had letters for the other parishes in the Prelazia asking us for our help. And up to this time, anytime they needed our help, they would ask us, and as Sisters of St. Joseph, we would change our schedule. We would be overloaded with work so that maybe two could go upriver to help a priest up there and come back home, and then maybe two could go down there. We were always, always generous people, you know. And I feel that our desire to be completely available, not only to the people, but to the whole mission team, has made the Sisters of St. Joseph dedicated and good women and loving women. But we decided that we needed maybe to let three people in Borba or two people in Borba to get much more of a lay involvement. We had it, but it wasn't complete. You know, there are times you just get exasperated and you take over. See? And what happens is you do that once or two or three or four times, and then you're putting the people right back to where they were. That's the sister's job. She can go ahead and do it. You know, and it's difficult. Like if the teacher doesn't send up for catechism, the best thing for me to do is to take that class, but I don't. I send the kids to her house. Okay? And that's hard for me to do. You know, it would be so much easier for me to go in there for the 45 minutes and take that class, but no. I'll send them to her, and she has to figure out what she's going to do with them, how she's going to do them, and when she's going to get that class. But with five of us, we didn't do that. I'd say, oh, I'll take that class. I can be released. And as a result, the program began to fall, and the bishop called our attention to it. He said he thought that we were doing things that the people could do and would do if we were not assume that leadership. So through that, we decided that we would open another house. And so March of 1982, we opened a new house in Nova Linda, which is downriver from Borba. And Barbara and Terry are going to live and work in Nova Linda. And when Barbara was here in the States, I lived with Terry for 3 months to get the house ready, to get things prepared, to work with some training programs, and to get more or less your sense of where we were going and how we were going to do it. And now that Barbara's back, she has moved on to live in Nova Linda. And last, in 1981, in our assembly meeting, which is a calling together of all the people that from all the all the parishes in our parousia, lay people and religious and priests, we have an assembly once a year, in which we write out our goals, our priorities, and we try as a group to give some steps on how we can fulfill those goals and aims and our priorities. And last year, let me see, 81, the idea came up that after all these years, we needed a coordinator. We needed someone really and truly to bring things together in a way that we needed to build up something. Everybody would take these priorities to their place and do them, but no one was seeing what was being done. And when we come every year to evaluate, there was nothing to evaluate because everybody was doing a little own thing. And so this came from the lay people, that they wanted someone that could begin to organize and someone that could visit their parishes, someone that they could say, we need help in this particular thing. Who do you call? And so it came up and we discussed it and we all came to the conclusion that we needed a coordinator. But the bishop didn't accept the coordinator as coordinator. He felt that it should be a coordinator secretary. So that was fine, which meant another obligation.
What's due?
Well, that meant that he would communicate to me and I would communicate to the other parishes. And so we decided we would accept that coordinator secretary. And so we had a vote on a person. And my name was offered and I was voted upon. And I accepted the position in the fact that they needed to tell me what their needs were and what they wanted me to do and how they wanted me to do it. But it was very difficult because we didn't know. And you were working here with two different mentalities, a mentality of a lay group that needed someone that wanted to be told what to do. And then we who knew what to do but couldn't impose on them. So it took a lot of discussion. It took a couple of days of what are you asking me to do? And there weren't too many definite directions. And so the most important directions was to really and truly just for a year to visit, to see what the programs were, to see how I could help them, just to encourage them that somebody was interested in me. So that's what I've been doing. Out of this has come that we needed a better means of communication. So as my job as coordinator secretary, I do a bulletin. I do like a little newspaper. I try doing it every month, but it becomes too difficult because of transportation, my needing the boats to get the news, everything. So I do it every 2 months. And they send me all that has happened in their parishes and what they're doing. They have chosen people in their parishes to write. And they send it to me. And then I write it up and I send it back to them. That was one. And another thing was communication on different meetings, on different courses that are being offered, which brought me into a new aspect of really getting into the Brazilian church, the Brazilian religious communities, asking around to see, you know, please send us information and stuff like that. I have enjoyed the job very much. I don't know exactly what the patterns or what the directions in the job is for me to do, but I think it's very necessary. I think it's also necessary that we begin to build up an archive, a history. We have nothing. You know, if our priority is ministry of the family, well, I'd like to think of what Nova Linda or Altaises or Nova Ripuna is doing. I don't know because I can't go to any files. I can't go anything because they've never sent anything in. And that's one of the things I've asked.